Hello there! Welcome to this episode of Force Ghost Conversations. This is your host, Anthony King, and this week, I'm going to share some highlights from my recent experience at the Disney 100 exhibition. Before we get started, I'm inviting you to join the conversation with us. We can be found on Twitter and Hive at Force Ghost Pod. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok just by searching Force Ghost Conversations. Also, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast on your listening site of choice. Plus, Force Ghost Conversations is live on Patreon. If you are a fan of the podcast and would like to consider pledging your support, there will be a link in the episode description for you to check out the various tiers offered. Finally, please be sure to check out our TeePublic store to buy some Force Ghost Conversations merchandise. And without further ado, it is time to gather around the campfire for some Force Ghost Conversations. All right, everybody, welcome back to another installment of Force Ghost Conversations. As always, this is your host, Anthony King, and I am thrilled to chat about my recent experience, very recent experience. In fact, at the time of recording this, I went this morning at the Disney 100 exhibition. Yes, the first stop, if you will, of this traveling exhibit. They'll be going all around the country and I believe a little bit internationally too, in celebration of the 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney Company, which of course started in 1923, hence the title, you know, D23 and all that as their fan club. And all that stuff. So this was an amazing exhibit. I'm going to spoil it for you now. So just full disclosure, if you know, you missed out on what we talked about last week's in the episode, of course, where I said about how I'm going to abide as best I can by the protocols of the SAG-AFTRA strike as well. So basically what that means is I'm going to do my best to not promote anything regarding current or previously released items from studios, but I feel like this is one of those things with the gray area of it all, where because it's a museum exhibit, it's not necessarily, by talking about it, it's not promoting the movies themselves, it's promoting the exhibit. So I think I'm okay in regards to talking about this. So if I'm wrong, someone please let me know. But I do think that I'm following appropriate protocols here in terms of not promoting anything specifically and all that. So hopefully I'm abiding by what I set forth in the guidelines last week. So if you are unfamiliar, please check out last week's episode. You also won't miss, you know, you'll also get to hear an amazing reaction, I think, to the Star Wars Outlaws trailer. The upcoming video game that I was able to do pretty much live on air, having not really seen it since it debuted. So that was a really great episode, so be sure to go check that out. And of course, we're going to talk about the Disney 100 exhibit during the main portion of this episode. And of course, like I mentioned in last week's episode, because I don't want to be promoting stuff, I generally will shy away from Cloud City gossip until protocol guidelines have changed or the strike concludes, etc. So that will kind of be the norm moving forward here until otherwise. But I did want to note one quick bit of news that took place over the last week here, which you may have seen. If you're a fan of pop culture and all that stuff, like, you know, I am, you may have seen that actor Paul Reubens, who is most famously known for Pee Wee Herman, has unfortunately and sadly passed away this past week at the age of 70. And his relation to the Lucasfilm galaxy of it all is that he voiced the droid Rex, Captain Rex, if you will, R3X, from the original Star Tours ride, which you may have ridden at Disneyland or Walt Disney World or Disney, like, Tokyo Disneyland, etc. And he also voiced the character in Star Wars Rebels when they reprised him. And of course, DJ Rex is now at Oga's Cantina in Galaxy's Edge, which we'll be talking about extensively in an upcoming episode. Because I feel like parks are also one of those gray areas where I can talk about video games, parks, books, comics. I feel like those are the things that are really safe to talk about that aren't necessarily promoting films, movies, and TV. So you can expect all that kind of content in the upcoming future here. But we did want to express our condolences to the Rubens family, as well as, you know, just to celebrate the work of this actor. You know, he's also in some Tim Burton other films. You know, I'm sure many of you probably know him from Pee Wee Herman, naturally. But if you're at Oga's Cantina, you know, just have one for in memory and honor of Paul Rubens, a.k.a. DJ Rex. So if you're at Oga's Cantina, just look at the droid that's playing the music and having a great time being a DJ. You can also spin the DJ Rex playlist on Spotify. I'd imagine Apple Music as well probably has it. Don't quote me on that one. I at least know it's on Spotify because I listened to it there. But I did want to acknowledge that before we got into the rest of our conversation here. So certainly rest in peace, Paul Rubens. Thank you for your great work and contributions to pop culture, to cinema, to film, to television. All that's great stuff. Moving on, so the main portion of this episode will be about my experience at the Disney 100 exhibit. Now, this was announced several months ago, and the Disney podcast, D23 Inside Disney, did a lot of interviews with the curatorial staff and the people behind the scenes at Walt Disney Studios that put this exhibit together. So I was a big fan of being sure that I was able to see this in some way, shape, or form in its traveling content. So it's actually was first debuted a couple months ago at the Franklin Institute, which is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So as you all know, I'm currently based in Washington, D.C., but I'm originally actually from the greater Philadelphia area. I'm from Hershey, Pennsylvania, which is really only about an hour and a half on a good day from Philadelphia itself. And, you know, I just grew up around Philly. Philly's naturally a part of my DNA. I'm a big fan of all Philadelphia sports. We went to Philly a lot as a child. So it's really like my town, basically. So I love the Franklin Institute. It's such a great museum alone. If you are not a fan of Disney, but you're in the Philadelphia area, or if you're thinking of where you're wanting to go for vacation to begin with, I mean, look no further than Philadelphia and the Franklin Institute, because especially for a family-friendly place that offers a lot of space for families and children, particularly to of all ages, I would say, to just think creatively and outside the box, like all that is available and on display there at the Franklin Institute. Like literally you can walk through a live, just big heart model. Like it's wild. It's hard to explain, but you just have to be there to believe it. And they've done several of these traveling exhibits that come through there. These big name exhibitions that come to the United States generally go through the Franklin Institute at some point during its run. So I can remember as a kid, famously the King Tut exhibit was one that went through there that was really popular and stayed for many months. I can remember seeing the billboards for it quite often, frankly. I think it might have come back a few times too because it was that popular. Prior to the pandemic, Mrs. Forsco's Conversations and I also went to a traveling exhibit there, which was about the art of Marvel, per se. Where they showcase a lot of different art for the comic books, as well as props and costumes from the various movies from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which was just a fantastic exhibit. So we knew what the caliber of curatorial expertise that the Disney company was putting into this effort. And naturally, with it being the 100th anniversary of the Walt Disney Company this year, they had a lot to expectation to live up to, I would say, as well as how to present that to an audience that, you know, may not necessarily care about, you know, Steamboat Willie and Oswald and those early cartoons, perhaps even all the way up to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, versus your more recent fare, your Moanas, your Frozens, your Lion Kings, your Aladdins, right? There's a very clear dichotomy, perhaps, of folks where their interest levels lie, and especially with young families, too. So they had their work cut out for them. But as a fan of the property of the studio itself and of studio history, and like, you know, I soak up all those documentaries as much as I can about the subject, I wanted to make sure that I was able to see this. So for full disclosure, if you've been following me on social media this past week, you know that I've been on vacation, a well-deserved and an earned vacation. I've been spending the majority of the week in Atlantic City, which is about an hour from Philadelphia. It's in New Jersey. It's on the Jersey shoreline, if you will. well, I don't think anybody would necessarily call it the Jersey Shore, but it is a city along the coast there. And, you know, it's very famously known for its casinos and gambling, et cetera, all that fun stuff. Me, my wife, Mrs. Forrester's conversations with my mom and my stepdad all went to the Ocean Casino, if you know it, over there. And we hung out there for the last 4 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then for Friday, we drove into Philly because, of course, I'm a Philly sports fan. And I wanted to see the Philadelphia Phillies, the reigning National League champs, if you're a fan of baseball, or at least you catch up with baseball, which it means basically they went to the World Series last year. Unfortunately, they lost. It was a tragic loss, if you ask me. It still hurts to think about, but I wanted to see them play, and it's been almost at least 8 years, frankly. It was the last time, it was 2016, that I saw the Phillies play in person at Citizens Bank Park. Of course, living in the DC area, I've seen them many times at Nats Park, but to see them actually at the bank in Philadelphia was a wonderful experience, and got to introduce Mrs. Forsco's conversations to the Phillies in that matter too, which was a fun experience, although they lost to the Kansas City Royals, one of the worst teams right now in baseball. It is what it is. Honestly, for those at home, full disclosure, in all the years I've been going to baseball games in Philadelphia, I've actually only seen the Phillies win once in my lifetime, and that's a lot of games I've seen, and maybe I'm the problem. But when I see them away, I have much better luck. I see them win constantly here in D.C., so maybe that's just the way that it should go. I think I've also seen them win in New York. When I went to Citi Field once to see them play the Mets. What a different time that was, for sure. But anywho, since we knew that the exhibit, I believe, goes all the way through the end of August, and we were in Philadelphia, before we drove back to the D.C. area this morning, I said, let's go check out the Disney 100 exhibit at the Franklin Institute. And boy, did it not disappoint whatsoever. So here's a little bit of some spoiler talk for anybody. If you are planning to go to the Disney 100 exhibit, or if you just don't want to be spoiled whatsoever, or pause this now, you can skip to the end or something like that, right? Like, I'm going to be talking full spoilers here on out, so you've been forewarned about the rest of the conversation here naturally. So this was a great exhibit. I thought that it did a great job being both interactive. You feel immersed in the exhibition itself, the lighting, and just the overall presentation of everything through the various rooms. There's about 10 rooms of the exhibition. It makes sense to me, both story-wise and separating everything. And frankly, the artifacts and objects that they have on display are just really cool pieces that they've pulled out from the Walt Disney archives that are now on display for this effort. So it, of course, starts with a nice little briefing from Walt Disney himself. I don't know how they pulled that technology together to basically have him introduce everybody to the exhibit, talk about how excited he is for everyone to be here, to learn about storytelling. Maybe it was repurposed footage for something. Who knows? It looked crystal clear. I mean, they definitely upscaled it to like 8K or something like that. It looked fantastic. That was a great way to introduce ourselves to the exhibition. And then, of course, it starts off with the early days of the Walt Disney Company, talking about Oswald, Steamboat Willie, all that stuff, the Alice short films, all that great stuff. And Disney just overall about Walt Disney and his journey to Los Angeles. Really just some rudimentary stuff about Walt and moving it along. I will say, just as from I studied museum studies in public history in my undergrad degree, so this is kind of right up my alley too, where I didn't feel like you got museum fatigue at all in this matter. If you didn't want to read everything, you didn't have to in order to get the full story, which was another thing that I think is a positive of this exhibition. But if you wanted to take deep dives and spend hours in the exhibit, then that's fully up to your prerogative as well, and you're going to get a lot of information out of this experience overall. So just take that into consideration as you're thinking, do I go to this? Do I not go to this? I don't think you can absolutely, it's going to have something for everybody, I think, at the end of the day here, because they're, of course, incorporating everything from just the Walt Disney Animation Studio to the Broadway productions, to the parks, to even all the divisions within the film company, right? Lucasfilm, Pixar, Marvel, National Geographic, all this stuff is fully on display and well within the rights of the company to have out in the exhibition space. So just some of the key highlights of course, they talk about the animation process and all that stuff. So you, as you can imagine, they've got some artifacts on display to match that. And one of the greatest things and the coolest things, frankly, if you ask me, are some of the props related to that. So they have on display the prop book from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, right? Like if you remember some of those early Disney animated movies, they have the if you will, like the storybook that opens up and then it makes it feel like you're reading a fairy tale, but you're watching it on animation, right? So they have that for Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and they also have it for Cinderella out on display. And I gotta tell you, that Cinderella one, I mean, you probably have seen it with the jewels on it. Or was it Sleeping Beauty? I hope it was Cinderella. Let me see if I can find it. I hope that I didn't mess up there with that one, because that would be, oh golly gee, a shame, of course. Sorry, as I'm typing up the items here. I just want to make sure that I got it right here. So I don't think it was Cinderella, actually. I think it was Sleeping Beauty. Yep, it was definitely that one. All right, yeah, I'm so sorry, everybody. It was definitely the Sleeping Beauty book. So fully disregard me just saying Cinderella there. It was the Sleeping Beauty one. And my goodness, is it a massive story overall? I mean, you can almost like really knock someone out with that. That is like, I can imagine not only is it heavy, but it's probably about, my gosh, at least a foot and a half long. It's big, and it fills up the full display case to a great degree there. Some of the other things of general just fun stuff within the exhibit that I thought were awesome to see on display: Captain America's shield from Civil War, a couple of helmets from the Marvel characters throughout the MCU, particularly from one of my favorites was the original Iron Man outfit, right? If you recall from that movie, when he puts the suit together within the cave there, and he kind of has that Mark One suit that he comes out with, that helmet was really cool to see out on display. I'm a big fan of the film Christopher Robin, of course, the modern adaptation, not necessarily the modern adaptation because it takes place post-World War II, but the more recent 2018 live action adaptation of Winnie the Pooh and that Christopher Robin story, but really a more unique take on it with the live action introductions of everything into it. And they had the prop of Winnie the Pooh on display, and I thought that was really neat. Love that movie, and I think that the bear just overall in the design was very cute to see. So that really got me a little emotional, if you will. And of course, as you're walking through this, they're playing music, well-known music from the Walt Disney Studio history. Of course, everything from When You Wish Upon a Star. You'll even hear a little bit about Soul. The Mandalorian themes with Ludwig Göransson comes up later on. This is all great stuff, so it's certainly not stuff to sleep on whatsoever. So that was all really cool stuff. I like seeing, like, you know, the whole process of animation come together, storyboarding. They showcase different items and artifacts about that through the exhibit. I like seeing the camera that they use to kind of showcase layering within animation, which was something that I have always found to be really a neat detail, especially for those early Disney animated films such as Pinocchio, which really has that out on display. And I got to see, you know, a little tie to Lucasfilm, which was to the Pixar camera from 1988, or say the computer from that process. And they talked a little about Ed Catmull and that. So if you've seen Light and Magic, which talks about that to a good degree, then you kind of know what they were talking about here. But to actually see one of those monstrous computers on display, too, which you know what it leads to with Toy Story and Bug's Life and those great movies that come later. It's just like, wow, the causation here is just really cool. And to see that the technology and the creativity that has always inspired the Walt Disney Company to a large degree and has been a part of its mission statement still lingers to this day. But man, when you see that lineage, especially like looking at some of the animatronics that they have on display from like great meetings with President Lincoln all the way up to the Hall of Presidents now, where it's really a state-of-the-art kind of process. And even the stuff that they currently have in the parks with, like, the I know Avatar Journey Through Navi River, I believe, has a great animatronic, and Galaxy's Edge has several animatronics that are just top tier in terms of the work that they're producing. So let's talk a little bit about Star Wars here, because it is on display at the Disney 100 exhibit here, because of course Lucasfilm was a part of Star Wars. Lucasfilm was a part of Star Wars, obviously, but Lucasfilm was a part of the Walt Disney Company, especially since 2012 when they officially were purchased by the company. But they've had the pleasure of being within the parks since the mid-80s with, of course, the introduction of Star Tours. And what they had on display were the following items. So they had the dice from The Last Jedi, right? Han's dice that are also featured later on in Solo, and a little bit of A New Hope if you catch the little part where Chewie bumps his head on them. They have an animatronic Porg, or a puppet Porg, I should say. The BB-8 from Force Awakens, Last Jedi, Rise of Skywalker, that kind of the puppet that they would use for it is on display. They also have the reforged Skywalker blade, so what Rey uses in Episode 9 is also on display. And finally, they have a full Stormtrooper outfit from Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. So that was really cool to see all those things in person. The great detail for me was in seeing the reforged lightsaber, and I had seen it a little bit at Galaxy's Edge when I was trying to pick out what legacy lightsaber to purchase myself, but it was great to see those hidden details that you probably perhaps don't get to see when you're watching the movie, of course, or if you're holding a lightsaber, right? To see like the burn marks infused into it right from the events of Episode 8, where it is split in half and it has that big almost explosion, if you will, to see those burn marks on it really shows to me the fact that like they were just pieces together. They had to just weld together at this point to reforge this lightsaber together anew, reborn again, if you will, under Rey, right? This is really, in my opinion, when it becomes Rey's lightsaber, because she chooses it at the end of the day, rather than the blade choosing her, right? She's choosing to persevere with this blade, much like Anakin creates that lightsaber to begin with, and then Luke forges his own lightsaber after theoretically he thought he lost that one. So I found that to be really great. It's always fun to see Stormtrooper outfits, in my opinion. So those were just really the only Star Wars things on display at the exhibit. I mean, Marvel and Star Wars really didn't have too much on display, perhaps. Also, Pixar really didn't have a whole lot. But frankly, when you have 100 years worth of history, they got a lot to cover and a lot of material to get around in the course of a 10-room exhibit. So I know that they had their work cut out for them overall, and to really craft a wonderful story that they did, and to get, you know, people like me and my wife emotional as we're walking through this, think we're, you know, feeling strong ties to nostalgia, right? Like, we're seeing the dress from Cruella, we're seeing an outfit from the Lion King on Broadway, we're seeing some of the props from the recent Little Mermaid that Halle Bailey used in that film, right? The fork that she uses, the telescope that she uses on display as well, even to just some cult classics and some favorites, right? So like the book from Hocus Pocus, right? The spell book, the Sanderson spell book, if you will, if you're remembering with me appropriately at this point, to see just some of the great artifacts. Perhaps the coolest artifact on display is the number one employee badge that was Walt Disney's, right? He was employee number one at Disneyland, and to see his badge from 1955 when Disneyland opened, I mean, that is just a priceless artifact to have on display that just is so valuable, so incredible to have, and just to be able to see that and to have families come there and talk about it, and all that is just really cool to witness with our own eyes. And that's why I'm a big proponent of actually going to the museum, seeing the exhibit yourselves, looking up close and personally at the artifacts, seeing how tiny people are. I mean, these actors and actresses look imposing on screen, and they do, you know, the people behind the camera really do a great job putting them in their best light and all that stuff. But you get up there, you're like, man, they're tiny. They got And it's just funny to see all that and just to like think that, yeah, there are real people under there and just vastly different from what we perhaps see on screen, or at least our perceptions of what that is in terms of what reality are might be separate things. So that's where Star Wars came into play here in a large degree. I thought the exhibit was really exquisite. I love the story that was crafted to it. I always talked about creativity, innovation, but always tied it back to storytelling, which I think is a real tenet of what the Walt Disney Company tries to showcase. And they also, like I mentioned, showcase just about a little bit of everything. So from the animation side of things to the parks to Lucasfilm to Marvel. I mean, they could just do a 10-room exhibit on one of those things itself, right? But to cover all that stuff, you're really getting a greatest hits of all the things now. I will say the only criticism that I really had about it was there was a lot of reproductions of original artifacts on display. I would say probably about 75% of what things shown are is a reproduction. So, you know, as a person that loves seeing the original items themselves, I much would prefer to have that on display rather than a reproduction. But I understand, like, this is a thing that is going to, it's a traveling exhibition that's going from place to place to place to place over the course of several years, probably. And for them to be that long away from the Walt Disney archive, perhaps you don't know what the original condition of these items are. I don't know. There's probably a very good reason as to why they're not on display. So I will take that as it is. So just be aware that if you are going to the exhibit in the future, that there are a lot of reproductions. So just be sure to read the tag that accompanies each artifact to see exactly what it is or its aspects of origin when you're looking at its cataloging information there. So just be aware of all of that. But overall, I think you're going to have a great time. It's really a family-friendly experience. It moves, you know, it flows very well. It's logical from room to room. You're going to spend about an hour, I'd say, realistically in there. And just to soak everything in and to read things, depending on your level of expertise with the Disney company to begin with, or your level of interest, you may fluctuate a little bit, you know, add or subtract 15 minutes or so from that total. But that is about what I think you really need to in order to have a really great time to get your money's worth out of this exhibition. So that is all that I had for this week's episode. I hope that you enjoyed my run through of my experience with the Disney 100 exhibition that's currently at the Franklin Institute, but it's going to be, of course, traveling across the country, and they're going to be having other aspects of it in parts across the globe. So be sure to check out, you know, Walt Disney 100 exhibition online to see where it's traveling, and perhaps it is in your neck of the woods, and to make sure that you carve out time appropriately so that you can go check it out for yourself. So we'll be back next week with another topic of discussion, folks. I can't necessarily say what it's going to be about yet, as I'd like to record these as close to release date as possible, just so that if there's anything that really comes up in between that I want to talk about, that it gives me the free space to do so. That's why I wanted to, instead of pre-record an episode, knowing that I was just getting back from vacation, I wanted to come home and immediately kind of record some first reaction thoughts for you all about the exhibition, which I thought was just a really, really great time. You're not going to regret it, trust me, especially if you're a fan of what we do here at Force Ghost Conversations, and they apply that whole type of approach to the exhibit overall, in my opinion. So you're going to enjoy it. You're going to have fun. Make sure you get out and go see it if you can. So we'll be back next week with a brand new episode about something in the Lucasfilm Star Wars galaxy of it all. And be sure to follow us on all the social media sites, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and Hive. To search Forest Ghost Conversations and you'll find us on those platforms. We'd love to continue the conversation with you all on those platforms. Also, if you're a fan of the show and would like to consider pledging your support via our Patreon site, there's a link in the episode description here, and you can find out the various tiers offered. And for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a ton of different Forest Ghost Conversations goodies. So don't miss out on that fun stuff. You can also check out our Tee Public store, which also has a link in the episode description where you can see all the merchandise that we have available, which ranges from hoodies to t-shirts to tank tops, baby clothing, and a whole slew of other stuff. So, I mean, frankly, just look it up. And you can apply our Star Wars inspired logo, our Willow inspired logo, as well as our Indiana Jones inspired logo to those designs. But if you're looking to support the show monetarily, whether it be Patreon or TeePublic, you can also just tell a friend about us, tweet about the show, share us on your social media sites. Leaving a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice really helps to grow the show as well. And you can also just, you know, hit the subscribe button, and then you won't miss an episode. So that we continually stay in your podcast feeds, which always is a great help to the show overall. So until then, folks, we'll be back next week. May the Force be with you, and take care. Thank you.